Welcome back to Embracing Your Mortality podcast with me, Sue Brain. On the first day of the month, I post an interview with somebody who is passionate about helping us all to live more consciously for a better world. And with so much chaos and change happening across the globe, we all need as much inspiration and hope that we can get these days. So this is why I'm so delighted to introduce my May guest, which is Patrick Leo Holland, actor, TEDx speaker, and author of The Ultimate Power of You. Patrick believes there is a secret to life, and we all hold the answer to this secret within us. So welcome, Patrick. I love your mission statement, which is about helping people to develop honesty, integrity, boldness, and compassion, and how all of us have the wisdom within us to connect with these powerful qualities. But before we get into this and what your book is about, I'm really curious to know what called you to do this work and what called you to write the book?
Very interesting. Thank you for asking that. It's the main driver behind it was in my late teenage years and in my early 20s and late 20s, I was quite a disillusioned, always quite buoyant, but I had an inner disillusionment, if you want. Something didn't quite feel right. I didn't feel worthy. And it was a nagging thing that would take away from my joie de vivre, you know, my passion for life. And I didn't like it. And as I looked out in society, I didn't see any answers. So I went on the, I went, no, there must be a way, and was always looking, asking questions, looking, searching. And it came to me very close to home. It was three specific events that happened one after the other. When my father died, in his last few days, I got to sit with him and talk, asking the questions that you want to ask. And I feel very privileged in that. Later on, a few years later, I got to spend the last few months of life with my mum and went through the journey of helping care for her and her burden of dealing with cancer that she had. And I sat and I watched and I listened. And then I did it a third time with a very good friend who was also on his last part of this journey. And I noticed patterns of behavior, patterns of thought, but more than anything, a pattern of a need and a desire to shed the things that they've been holding on to that were not serving them, grudges, anger, regret. And it manifested itself very, very plainly in that they needed to get these things out of them. And the way I look at them is, it's like having a seed, a negative seed planted into you. Let's say you have a relationship breakup and that plants a negative seed. The next time you go into a relationship, that's there with you and you haven't dealt with it. And over time, if enough of these things can be conditioned into you, they become a weed that almost chokes your spirit. And the key that I saw was these three wonderful people had this absolute burning need to rid themselves of these seeds and weeds. And when they did, this massive weight came off their shoulders. And I went, oh my goodness, they are preparing themselves for whatever is next. And the light bulb went off, Sue. And this is when I got my first insight. I went, if you've got to deal with this stuff at the end, over all this poison that's been sitting in you over all those years and you have to deal with it at the end, why on earth don't we deal with it much earlier so we're not carrying that burden with us?
It's really interesting what you saw personally, because this exactly matches the end of life experience studies that I did with Dr. Peter Fenwick. And we realized that people might look as if they're in pain, but actually what they are is in existential pain. They haven't cleared what you say. They haven't cleared the negative stuff that they've been carrying, or the guilt or the remorse or the shame. And it's wonderful that you really understand that and you saw it happening with these three very close people to you.
Yeah. And well, what happened, it sent me down a research rabbit hole, and I went and talked to psychologists, doctors, end of days carers, consultants, nurses. And I wanted to know, is it the norm, Sue? And it is. And it often comes out as an I wish regret list. I wish I'd laughed. Simple things too. I wish I'd laughed and loved more. I wish I hadn't waited to stomp on my fears and go for my dreams. I wish I had let go of anger and fear and grudges and forgiven myself and other people so much earlier. And one that really stuck with me was, and it surprised me at the time, but actually it's a classic in human conditioning. I wish I hadn't worried quite so much what I thought people thought about me and what I thought was expected of me, because that can be a real inhibitor of our spirit. You know what I mean?
I do. And it's hard, isn't it? I mean, we're so brought up in this kind of emotional shutdown, spiritual shutdown culture in the West. I've been spent time in the East as well, and they don't seem to have this sort of angst that we do. And it's almost like that we're never allowed to shine, even as children. We're conditioned in, this is the way you've got to do it, the sort of this linear way of living life, or putting us all together, you've all got to wear the same uniform, you're not allowed to shine as an individual. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's so much sort of this sort of sense of shame about, can I be an individual? Does that make sense to you?
It makes complete sense to me. I love the word shine. It always scared me for a little bit, because I went, oh, if people are shine, they're arrogantly shining. But actually, no. You shine the best of yourself, and the radiance that comes off you shines on other people. Theirs shines back on you, and you share that shine together. And it's, you know what, we're not taught in this culture exactly what you've just said. And that's why I love the law of Dharma, which is an Eastern law, the law of purpose in life. The highest form of expression of ourselves is to discover our unique gifts and talents and share them with the world to bring happiness to ourselves and others.
And that's our Dharma. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's such a simple law, but we're not taught that.
No, we're taught to get an education, go out, get it, save some money, do this, look at it, accumulate. And I think the center of it, Sue, is we're almost, human beings are almost a split personality. We have that need to survive and have security and be safe. But I think, especially in our society, we've lost the balance of balancing that with the freedom of spirit, the freedom of community, the freedom of really the essence of who we are. And that comes down to perhaps we've lost the ability to follow our heart.
Or we're too afraid to, because in case the vision that we have is ridiculed, or it doesn't fit into what the norm is, or I know quite a lot of people who are going through their midlife crisis at the moment. You know, I did as well when I was 40. I didn't have a clue who I was. Nobody explained to me when I was at school what life was about. I knew where Paris was and I knew how to bake a nice scone, but I did not know how to do life. I had no idea who I was. And I think, you know, when the midlife crisis comes, which it comes to all of us, it's a wallop, because suddenly you're going, hang on a minute, I'm 40 something. What's happened to my life? Whatever I'm doing doesn't have any meaning for me. And I wondered how your perception of that is.
I think it's incredibly important that we do awaken to that. And what I found is, through doing this work, you can actually approach that preemptively. So why wait until you get into the horror of that midlife crisis and understanding, wow, I'm here for such a short period of time? You know what? It's all about the doings.
Yeah.
It's about what you can do in the day. And I do love to see our needs and our wants and our desires and our dreams change over time in their substance, but they don't change in their essence. Do you know what I mean? We want to be happy. We want to be loved. We want to love. We want to have experiences. We just, going back to that I wish regret list, I wish I'd laughed and loved more. And it's about finding that balance of how can you laugh and love more while looking after yourself and your family and your human needs. And
yeah.
Then also sharing the best of yourself so that hopefully your little corner of the world is just that slightly little bit better off when you leave it than when you found it.
Yeah, I'm a great believer in learning to hold the light, whatever that means to you, whatever context that is, comes
shine
to you in your
life. Hold the light, whatever it may be.
Yes, yeah.
Because and the darkness is coming, baby. It's always coming.
I think what sparked me off when you were talking about the way that we are in life is I feel like we've lost this sense of service. And when we are, that doesn't mean to say that we have to live in sackcloth and ashes or join a religious order. It just means that we use the best of ourselves to be of service in a bigger sense, in a greater in our communities or in our friendship groups. There's a sense of, it's difficult to explain this sense of service without sounding a bit puritanical, right. And I don't mean it like that.
Okay, so how about this? See, I agree with you 100%, but when we put it in those terms, it seems too big.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be of service, and what happens in our brains, we go, yeah, but what about me? What about my needs, right? And I want to talk in a little bit about those four words you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
The last of those I found is the most important. So you said you want to be in service and we should all be in service in some way. When I found the word compassion, the dictionary definition of compassion is wanting the best for all and everything. And I added something to that because so many people have a crippling sense of self-esteem, including yourself. So if you look at then compassion, wanting the best for all and everything, including yourself. If you are compassionately going into all experiences in your life, you're already in service.
Nicely put. Yes.
And in that, it's a guide. You're guided. So you don't have to worry about what your service is, because actually, even when someone's lashing out at you, you still want the best for them and yourself, and you'll find a way. And what happens then, and I think the ultimate part of this is as you clean away the stuff that holds you back, those seeds and those weeds, and you live with, I'll go with my four by words, honesty, calibrated to flow and away from conflict, and that's honesty with yourself and others, which builds an integrity. And when you've got integrity, you can't be bought, you can't be sold, you can't be manipulated, unless you want to be, right? Which might be a little bit of a backslide, but, you know, though it's part of being a human being. And then there was something I learned from all my years in America that I saw as very, very powerful, but exhibited itself in a little bit of a gross way, was boldness. The willingness to boldly go forward and go, right, that's where I'm going there, I'm going to do it. But what I saw over and over again, and I see it in Western culture, it causes destruction along the way. It's being bold and going there at all costs. And I always shied away from that because I would see people who would, Lance Armstrong, for instance, when he was winning the Tour de France all those time, what a bold guy until you found out he was cheating. And when you listen to people who've been in political power for a long time, they may start out with wonderful, wonderful words and vision, but the system gets them in the end, and they end up believing their own hype. Mm-hmm. And what it is I think you lose your sense of compassion and you become arrogant, and boldness and arrogance is ugly.
It's not a good bedfellow, those two, are they?
No, but the thing is, boldness and compassion are incredible bedfellows because you step over that line of fear that dances around in your mind every day boldly, but you do it with compassion, wanting the best for all and everything, including yourself. And for me, that's what's held me in. And that's what pushes me through, because it isn't, you know, talking about light and darkness. It's not that you don't go down into the darkness. It's about how long you stay down there. Mm. That's the real answer to me is, right, yes, I'm going to have a dark moment. I'm going to be in a bad place. I'm also going to have some great highs. But how long you choose or learn to stay down in the pit reflects massively on the quality of how you experience your life.
And it's also, I think this boldness is about learning to stand up for what you believe in, and that feeds into integrity, and that feeds into honesty. And in my own life journey, it's been a really hard journey to learn to be truthful. And I remember...
Oh, the lie is so easy, isn't it?
Oh, it's so easy to lie, isn't it? To lie to yourself or to make excuses. And I remember, this is a while ago now, I think that round about my midlife crisis, things were not going great. And I remember thinking, this is the moment I will never lie again. And gosh, that's hard.
Yeah, but you know what? Every time you do tell that little white lie, that justification, it just eats away at you. It's like being stung by a mosquito over and over and over and over again. And you know what? I'm going to do it today, but, you know, I'll be better tomorrow. It's all right. I can do this now. I can justify doing this now because then it'll let me be there, and then I can be better tomorrow. And actually, the full joy of life is being able to face the challenge of telling the truth and calibrating it to flow. Because a lot of the times we can lash out with the truth. Mm-hmm. And again, that's where the word compassion is so powerful, because when you want to lash out, when you're angry, when you're in that place, you can pull back and find a better way to connect with that human being in front of you.
Yeah. So Patrick, is all this information in your book? Because it's so interesting.
Yeah.
It's so mind expanding. That's what I love about the work you're doing.
Thank you. That's very, very kind. In the book, there's 15 years of work, and you and I went on the journey of doing our TED Talks together.
We did. That's how we met.
It is. And it was such a wonderful experience. For me, it was very, very important, because if you think about 15 years of work, how do you make it easy to access that? Because specificity and ease of being able to do something allows you to make a change if you find you need it. And doing the TEDx talk with you was so powerful for me, because it forced me to bring 15 years of work into 15 minutes.
Yes.
And in that, there's a specificity in it. So what I do with people now is, when they're going, well, where do I, okay, look, I've got habits that I see are represented in my behavior over and over again. I can see that. How can I address it? If you're in that place, you're in a great place. But a lot of people go, I. And so what I do is I just say to them, why don't you watch the TED Talk? There's 10 or 15 salient points in that TED Talk. And then what you can do is you can access the ultimate power of you through the little 2 and 3 page chapters. And where you find you've got a block or you have an issue, you can go, oh, let me have a look at that. And what it does, it's not a solver of all problems, but it's something to key you into. I need to address that. And it's the first step, or it helps you take the first step to address the thing that you want to take care of. Because I tell you, as human beings, Sue, we get used to just putting it off until tomorrow.
We sure do.
If we don't have a simple thing that we can do today It becomes tomorrow, next week, next month, and then you just forget all about it until you have another midlife crisis.
Yeah. I think it's really important what the point you're making here is, you know, this is a journey. This is not a quick fix, is it? And it's about waking up to, as you're saying, you know, the blocks inside you. And I think I always say to people, you know, there's no shame in the fact that you're struggling or that things aren't working out well for you right now. That's part of the human journey. It's part of showing you what you need to learn about yourself. And it always comes back is give yourself a break. And this brings me back to what you talk about, compassion. Compassion, it's about learning to be compassionate to yourself first.
Yeah. And it's missed out because, I need to be of service. I need to do this. I need to be better for other people. Man, if you don't fuel yourself, how can you maintain and sustain a need to help other people? You don't. You just revert back into your shell.
Or you become a fixer, don't you? You fix everybody else. And then you turn into an interferer.
Yeah. And your vehicle, your body, your mind, and your spirit becomes a little bit broken because you didn't help fix you. It's not that you have to fix it, but you didn't change the oil. You know?
Yes, yes. Lovely. Beautifully put.
You didn't change the air filter, the oil filter, all those things, the spark plugs. You didn't. And that, what does that mean? You forgot to put nice things in your body. You forgot to monitor how you think and how the ripple effect of that affects you and other people. And I think that's the key to it. You were saying about conditioning. We've got decades, you and I, we've got decades of conditioning in us, right? We are conditioning and being conditioned anyway. And this is the joy. The ultimate power of you is about understanding, yes, we've got conditioning. Yes, we're being conditioned. Yes, we're conditioning ourselves, but we have a say in how that happens. And I'm not saying that you can change that overnight, but if you find something that is blocking you, maybe in how you look after your body or how you act in times of stress with those that you love or how you face finances and relationship, and you go, right, I want to address that, you can take baby steps. Little nibbles at it over time. And in the end, the habit of what you do that's destructive, you can turn that into a habit that you want to keep.
Yes. Yeah.
I said there's a secret to life. That's the secret.
Yeah.
Is that you may not be able to change the world soon, but over time, through little adjustments, little bits of honesty, integrity, compassion, and boldness, you can change your world. And in that, you change other people's world. Is that not enough? For me, that's enough.
I think when you do your personal work like this and you take responsibility for your fear, your guilt, and your shame, which are the big hitters, aren't they? Let's face it. Once you start taking responsibility for that, you can start being, you can start holding the light, and people might go, oh, God, I want a bit of that.
Yeah.
Because always is about coming back to being to your integrity. And you know when you're not being honest, you know it, you know when you're lying to yourself. There's a stress or a feeling of tension, or it feels like you might be a sort of a stone rolling around your soul or something like that. You know it. And it's about learning to listen to that, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I always put that down to heart. And your heart, when your heart's wide open and the noise of society is not dominating you with fear, with its rhetoric about what's right and how you should do this and how the world's all going to end, once you come to that place of mindfulness, and I just want to key in on mindfulness for a minute. What is mindfulness? Because people go, yeah, I'm going to be full of mind. Mindfulness stems from Buddhism originally. It's about becoming the observer of yourself and of society to understand how the quality of your thoughts, words, and actions affect you and other people, and therefore over time, how that becomes habitual. And when you can take a moment to understand how the quality of your thoughts, the quality of the words you speak, and the quality of the actions you take, and go, oh, I need to take responsibility for that. That doesn't serve anybody. Mm. That's being mindful. Mm. And what I found is, and what you see with people who are in a great place, is that in the heat, in the stress, when you're just about to eat the whole cake, drink the bottle of vodka, lash out at your partner, do something very destructive or sabotage yourself or other people, you learn just to take a pause and take a breath for a moment and choose a better way. Yeah. And that, again, is part of the secret is, you know, 90% of what we do is already keyed in through conditioning. We're almost running on autopilot. But when you can access what's most important to you as a human being, and in those moments realize, I want to do this a little bit better, or I want to make this change, then you can go, when that happens again, even just not lashing out or exhibiting that destructive behavior is the start. And what I found over time is then, when the important decisions are there to be made, you're not only looking for the answer, but your mind and body is clear enough to be able to see the answer. And you're not only listening for what your heart and what the universe wants for you, but you can hear it. And mm-hmm. there's a massive difference in that. And unfortunately, because of all the media and noise and fear that is driven into us in our society, unless you take the time to access that quietness inside your brain, it's a difficult journey. It's a challenging journey.
And I love the fact that your book, The Ultimate Power of You, helps people to understand this journey back to who they truly are, with boldness, with integrity, with compassion, and with honesty.
Yeah. And the thing is, hang on, those are my four words. So what I did originally was I found 43 words of love and 43 words of fear. And I challenge people to look through those 43 words and say, which ones resonate with you? Again, with the TED Talk, what part of the TED Talk resonates with you? Start there. And for me, I took those 43 words, I got them down to 15, I got them down to 10, and now I found those integral four for me that hold me in the darkest of times, that help lift me in the lightest of times. And I don't know if you'll, well, I don't know if you'll understand this, but when I'm living in that way, I can feel my mum and dad smiling. And that is everything for me. And then when I'm in that state of flow, in that, knowing that I've been honest, that I've got integrity, I'm bold and I'm compassionate, I feel them smiling.
Yes,
and
beautiful.
I also feel the universe cradling me. And there's no better feeling than that, because you can face anything when you've got those allies.
Patrick, that's the most wonderful place to finish this fascinating conversation. Gosh, I could talk to you for days.
It is lovely to talk about the things that are most important, isn't it?
So that was Patrick Leo Holland, who, as you have heard, his mission is to inspire all of us about connecting with the ultimate power of who we are. For more information about Patrick and his brilliant book, The Ultimate Power of You, and his wonderful work, please go to www.theultimatepowerofyou.com. Now, my June guest is one of my favourite people on earth because we happen to be birth sisters. She's 2 days older than me. It's Alexandra Pope, co-founder of the Red School, which teaches leadership programmes that educate and empower women about connecting on a profound level to their menstrual cycle, and how the menopause is the spiritual gatekeeper for aging with grace, humility, and wisdom. So, see you on the 1st of June with Alexandra. And thank you all for listening, and bye for now.